Hello and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast all about slow living in a fast-paced world. I am Brooke McCallery.
My name's Ben McCallery and welcome to episode 246 as we continue our relationships theme for the month of July.
Deep diving into those relationships.
So last week we spoke about romantic relationships and this week we're going to broaden that net into family relationships and the broader family relationships. So not just talking about kids, siblings, mums and dads, but also aunties, uncles.
And
even family, like friends.
Yeah, sorry.
Really close friends relationships.
Friends who are as close, if not closer than family. Because what I will say at the very beginning, the very top of this episode, is that I completely understand that families are messy. A lot of people haven't benefited from a supportive or a close-knit family, or there's drama or, you know, trauma and hurt feelings and separations and all sorts of complicating factors. So please know that what we're going to talk about in today's episode is not just about shiny, happy families.
No.
It's about
the real
situation. I mean, all of what we're going to talk about, I think, applies to families, no matter what family looks like for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So before we start this episode, why don't we talk about where we are in the North American continent?
So the book tour is well underway. If you're listening the day this comes out, I've just finished speaking at Book Passage in San Francisco, Court Madera. And again, I just want to say thank you to people who are coming out to the events. I always live in fear that I will turn up to the bookstore and there will be no one there. So seeing people who are into it is such a relief, first of all, but it's also really inspiring because I'm not alone in wanting to make these changes in my life and the lives of others. But this coming week, I have three events. So the 18th of July, I will be at REI in Tustin. I think that's how you pronounce it, in Orange County. Mm-hmm. The 19th, I'll be at REI in Woodland Hills, LA. And then the 20th, I am doing an In Conversation with Courtney Carver, the Courtney Carver, in Salt Lake City at the King's English Bookstore.
Yeah, so a couple of quickfire events.
Yeah, three and three.
Three and three. So to find out more about those and to reserve or RSVP for them, just head over to slowyourhome.com/events. Excellent. All right. Well, without further ado, let's get into it.
Okay.
So you mentioned at the top of the show that this is going to be an episode that's going to touch on or be applicable to a lot of your family and close friend relationships.
Familial relationships.
Yeah. Yep. So did you want to start with the youngest generation?
Yeah.
So the relationships we have with kids, because I know we get asked this a lot about not only our experiences but advice. And we have, over the past couple of years, you did some quite extensive deep dives into that through a number of hostfuls.
Yes.
So what can we add here? Like what other advice do you have in regards to relationships with kids?
Look, first of all, we will link to a whole heap of episodes where we do answer the question of how do you manage to slow down with kids?
Young kids?
Because kids aren't slow. And my answer is almost always a variation on, well, don't expect it to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And instead focus on how it feels.
Yeah.
Because it's not going, kids are busy, kids are loud, kids are messy, kids are opinionated, kids are emotional. Like none of those things on the outside looks like slow living.
Because we've gone to the extent, or I know I have, when I've provided answers on this topic, is saying it's actually not possible to live your best slow life with kids. You can definitely set up some parameters and building blocks and fundamental principles that will then, as a family unit, you'll improve on over the stages. But I think to go from young kids and living the slow life you want, it's virtually impossible.
Yeah. Just let go of the expectation of what it will look like, I think, is my piece of advice there. But there are absolutely things that you can do that bring in slowness amongst the craziness of having a young family or teenagers, I'm assuming. We don't have teenagers yet. But
so what are some of those quick fires?
I think creating time where you spend that time in the presence of each other and truly in the presence of each other, whether or not that's turning off the TV and playing a board game, whether that's having happy days like we do on a Sunday afternoon mm-hmm. where we put on some music, have a drink, have a bowl of chips and just sit down and talk.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff, like protect those times where you sit in the company of each other and listen and turn up for each other. Also, I think keeping a rein on our use of technology around children is really important because not only do they pick up on our habits. So if the kids see us with our phones in our hands constantly or constantly on our computers, that's normal to them, right? And that's what they're going to, over time, begin to prioritize themselves. But by putting your phone down when they walk in the room, by greeting them in the morning with a hug and a smile and looking them in their face, you're showing them what the priority is. You're showing them what it looks like to be present with your children. And also I think, so that's something that they're things that we as adults can do and that we're in control of. One of the biggest questions I think that people ask is, it's all the other stuff. It's all the external stuff that makes life feel busy. The birthday parties, the extracurricular activities, the constant, you know, full calendars. And my advice there is always met with a little bit of skepticism there, I think, because essentially I tell people, you're allowed to say no. Mm. Yes, your kids might get frustrated or upset with you if you say, no, you're not going to Tommy's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
But when the reality is you've been to Alice's and you've been to Alex's and you've been to Beau's party, you've done three
birthday parties in 3 weekends.
We're saying no to this one.
Yeah.
And that might be because Tommy's invited everyone in the grade and your kid isn't that great friends with them. You know, that sort of stuff, like really weighing up why we're saying yes to things. Don't feel like we have to say yes to everything because we don't. And then I think the other thing that's really helpful to me is to prioritize boredom. Like really think, I really think the boredom for kids is an underrated skill for them to learn how to deal with. And it's also a gateway into imagination
mm-hmm.
and play and exploration and curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, when our kids say they're bored, I'm always kind of a bit hyped about that. Like that makes me quite happy because then you get to say, okay, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Go outside. No, I don't want to go outside. 5 minutes later, they're playing. They've forgotten they were bored. But I think that constantly filling in our days, but also the days of our kids, means that they don't know what to do with themselves when they're bored.
Yeah.
They don't have the capacity to fill that space. So, like, just as a quick fire kind of few strategies, they're things that we employ at home.
Yeah. So there's two key traits or qualities that our kids, each of them in different ways, always want from us. So for our youngest, it's about exploring sharing activities. So it's being together and sharing in an experience because that's what he just gets a lot of enjoyment out of. That's how he shows affection. Do you know what I mean? Like it's being able to share an activity. Where our eldest, it's all about supporting. So it's about supporting her in whatever problem it is. So for me, I always go back to that they love those two things from us and what we give them. So I always try and prioritize those two different, I don't know, what are they? Experiences or traits or,
And I think really it just comes down to making time for that. And that's where these ideas all fit into the broader notion of slow living. I mean, you won't declutter your house and magically have an extra 3 hours a day to spend with your kid. That's not how it works.
Mm.
But perhaps you declutter and perhaps you start to live more mindfully and perhaps you make a few other changes that over time creates this buffer. It creates this additional energy. It creates the room for you to shift around your priorities. And then that's when you start to live more presently. That's when you start to have that time that you've created to spend in the areas that you want to spend, you know, an extra 3 hours a week with your family or whatever it may look like.
Yeah.
So it's really just a continuation and a constant recalibration of what's important. And over time you'll get there, you know, but I really do think that technology takes up a lot of time that it doesn't need to.
No. Yeah.
And I'm talking work stuff, but I'm also talking just procrastinating scrolling and those sneaky 15-minute kind of blocks that we're on our phones and don't even realize that we could have done something else with that time. Watching lots of TV, watching lots of movies. We can do other stuff with that time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's kids.
Yeah.
Can we then extend now into like broader family as well? And does it change?
Oh, yeah. I think it changes.
So what are some of the things that we can do to build and grow relationships with our broader extended family?
So let's talk like parents and siblings for now.
Yep.
I think that we crave connection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can hear our kids downstairs, but they are not bored.
They're bouncing off the walls.
Quite literally. People crave connection, but we're also terrified of having vulnerable conversations. And this, of course, differs across families and friendship groups and whatnot. But I think on the whole, we've spoken about it before, that that discomfort of having real and difficult and deep conversations is something that we run away from. Okay. So we keep things surface level.
Yeah.
And I think I've got a number of examples in my own family that we've had over the past couple of years that I'm just so appreciative of, because I know how difficult it is to sit down and have those difficult conversations. I mean, how do you sit down and talk to a parent about aging and death?
Mm.
You just do it,
mm.
you know, and you have to sit with the discomfort. You have to wait until people are at least open or amenable to the sitting. They may not be open and amenable to the subject, but at least kind of open that door. And if that's not something that you can do readily, perhaps there's something you can give them to read, or perhaps there's a podcast they can listen to, or perhaps there's a piece on the news that has introduced this topic that you want to discuss. And that's just one example. And I think really it's just making the time to do that. And in order to do that, you need to give time.
Mm.
So that might look like a weekly phone call if you don't live nearby. It might look like popping in for a cup of tea twice a week if you do live nearby. It might look like sending a handwritten letter to your siblings, letting them know how much you're thinking about them, or, you know, letting them know what's on your mind or in your heart. I just think that it's time that we need to give people. I went to New York with my parents and my sisters back in April. It was the first time the six of us, I'm one of four girls, the first time the six of us had been on a holiday, just the six of us, for 25 years. And there was 2 weeks where we just were together for the entire time.
Mm.
And it was wonderful, like such an incredible opportunity to be able to do that. But it was also a really incredible reminder of how vastly different people in the same family can be.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and yeah. I mean, you know that, but it was such a beautiful reminder to spend that time with them and see that. And we made time for conversations, like deep conversations. I remember one afternoon we all did the Myers-Briggs personality test.
Mm-hmm.
And that just
reminds me of Let It Be so much.
Yeah, exactly. Kelly's like, yeah, finally. Yeah. But all six of us did that. And to be able to read through, you know, the kind of overview of each of our profiles and personality types was just really interesting, because it opened up more conversations. But it felt safe. You know, it wasn't someone picking someone else apart saying you're like this and you do that and you don't do this. So I mean, I think that something like that.
Did everyone accept their results?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look, I think it's like anything. I'm not a huge fan of labels, so I read my Myers-Briggs overview and I'm like, yeah, totally, but don't you dare put me in a box.
I do, you know. I mean, I've done it a couple of times and I do get slightly different results every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. It at least gives, I don't know, like some outline, some – It's a brand without a brand, really.
Oh, yeah.
It does brand you in a particular way.
Yeah, and that's not really the point of the suggestion anyway. It's just figuring out safe ways to have important conversations with people that you love, that maybe you're related to.
So I feel that for like that greater family relationships, it's all about communication and togetherness for me. It's togetherness, because I feel in my own personal family, it's about sharing beliefs and values. And that's what gives our family commonality and I don't know, something that's what I feel like my family craves is that togetherness and sharing a meal over, you know, and talking about things over a meal.
Yeah.
That's, I think.
Your family definitely comes together around the table.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I think gives us, our family, its power.
So what, I mean, and you said commonality there. What happens when people have differing opinions and values? I think
it's more like just the sense of belonging
right.
and bonding rather than, you know, we share values. And,
gotcha.
And, which I think we do anyway, but it's that bonding that you have over that just being in close proximity to each other.
And you give time.
And bonding, yeah.
Yeah, you give time. Like those meals go for many hours.
Yeah.
You know, and you like you and your dad and your brothers particularly and your mum, they all cook fantastic food and it's a gift, you know, and we give the gift of turning up and no one has to rush off. We kind of, if we're there for the day, we're there for the day.
Yep.
And I think that giving that time to each other is really valuable. As everyone gets older and life gets fuller with kids and stuff, it doesn't happen as often as it used to.
Yep.
But when it does feel really special still.
I agree.
And that's much the same as my family. And I think that there's something really important there as well. I mean, if you're going to make time for your family, then make time. Don't kind of squeeze people in between two different appointments. If you want to sit and feel that sense of togetherness and belonging, and it's not stressful and traumatic to you to do so, then give the day, give the weekend, you know, see if you can remove yourselves from the everyday kind of battles and just find some quiet. So it does bring up the question though of when families aren't as
close
or peaceful or in agreement or sharing of values. And yeah. I know that given the current political climate, which is world over, but which is very us versus them, it feels like in some instances, what can people do when they love their family but vehemently disagree with them on certain things? I mean, how can you find common ground there?
Yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And I don't think it's a matter of just finding common ground. I think it's we need to elevate it a little bit more and just be more resilient. So my feeling is when there is a difficult relationship that you might have with family members or beyond, it's all about being able to tolerate each other's differences.
I hate the word tolerate, but I know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
And being able to adapt and take on board different opinions, but then also have your own opinion.
Yeah.
But then leave it in a positive way rather than let it just hang and fester, because it might be months until you talk to them again.
Yeah.
And you'll create this environment in your head where you make up stuff about whatever was said and it just gets so much worse. So I do think with those difficult, I mean, it is difficult for a reason, but I feel like as a society, we just don't have the resilience anymore to be able to
cope with opposing opinions.
Yeah. But, and then work and leave situations in a positive way.
Mm.
Why do we always have to have conflict at the end and that be the final thing?
Well, I don't think we always have to. That's certainly not the case with most of my interactions with most of my family, almost always, you know. But I do know what you're saying. Mm. And I think also it's an active choice, right, to love the person, even if you don't agree with the politics or the stance on a particular issue or whatever it may be. And I think if that's the choice that you're making, that you love that person, then I think love should come above those differences, you know? I really do.
Yeah.
And I, even as I'm saying that, I understand that that is hard. Like that's really difficult when you feel like someone is in direct opposition to a belief or a value that you hold very dear to yourself. Well, it's very hard.
And often it's not even like that. And I don't think it often goes to that value level. I think it's just like a point of view often.
Mm.
Like for me, someone with one political opinion over another political, that's pretty minor in terms of values and beliefs.
Mm.
I really do think that because I'm just talking about politics at the moment, because we're so, I mean, it's moved left and right, has moved, and they're basically just center, and there's only, you know, slightly differing opinions. This is my point of view in terms of a history of politics, but
And depends what politics you're talking about too. Well, you're talking about Australia.
Yeah, the world and world politics as well. But yeah, you still get those extremes. But what I'm trying to say is that a simple point of view shouldn't be enough for someone that you seemingly love and is a family member and you respect them to then shut them off straight away and think in your head, well, they're just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I've had enough of them. Right. Because of one point of view.
Sure.
Like it just, surely we can build enough resilience to be able to move through that.
So in that instance, do you feel like simply avoiding the topic is a good place to start?
No, everyone should have their point of view.
Okay.
And everyone should be allowed to express that point of view. No, this is not about, you know, not having and not and, and avoiding issues. Live your life.
Yeah, working out a way to communicate your point of view in a way that's not aggressive, that is either invitational or simply neutral.
Yeah. Just,
this is what I believe. This is the way I see the issue, whatever it may be, and leave it at that.
But then be resilient enough to be able to move on.
Sure.
And talk about something else.
Yeah.
And then have and be able to adapt to a changing situation.
Mm.
Like surely we can do that for people that we love.
Yeah. Well, I think we both do that.
Hmm.
So how do we do that? I mean, you just move on, right?
Yeah. Well, I get comes back to, and I've said it 13 times now, it's building resilience, which I think we struggle with as a society.
Hmm. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting part of like our relationships, just given I think that, I don't know, maybe it hasn't shifted. Maybe my awareness has changed or maybe the conversations I'm having with people are different, but... I'd be interested to hear what people have to say about that. Yeah, but I do really think that your point of resilience and ownership of our own point of view and ownership of our choices to move on as well is really important.
So one of the challenges that we have at the moment with our family relationship is that we're so far removed from them geographically.
Yes.
And while it's quite easy just to jump on Skype or text message and that it is definitely harder to stay in touch.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the solutions that you have for those difficult geographical
Yeah, I'm a bit torn barriers. On this actually because while, yeah, we're really fortunate to live in a time where we can just jump on Skype or make a FaceTime call and the kids can talk to their grandparents when they miss them really easily, and that is such a benefit, and I think it's something we have utilised quite a bit.
Yeah.
I also personally struggle with it because I feel like the quality of conversation is not there. I mean, if you've tried to have a choppy kind of Skype chat with someone and there's a delay and you're talking over each other and it's really hard to have any kind of depth to your conversation.
Really is.
Yeah. But also, I mean, you may have four people on either end of the call and everyone wants to catch up with everyone and it's not the same. So I appreciate that we have that ability to kind of touch base with people and check in, but that's kind of all it feels like, as much as I wish it was different. So I think you can definitely utilize, if you don't live close by to your family and you want to keep in touch, you can utilize technology, but I don't necessarily think that it's going to give you the same depth. So, I mean, things like even writing an email, you can at least give people more of an insight into where you're at and what you're thinking about, or ask them questions and have time to really consider what you want to know. And hopefully when they reply, the same will be applied. But even, and this is not something I have done, but even just thinking about it now, it might be a really lovely thing to do, is to send physical letters to people.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a mailing address and we're on the move every few days, so it's not easy for us to kind of receive mail, but to send them, I think that would be a really beautiful thing to do. And I also think that if you're looking at your extended family, I mean, people in many families are just spread across the globe. How do you stay in touch? That's where I do think that social media can actually be of benefit. I mean, even just by sharing photos on Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Facebook. I don't use it very much myself personally, but I do know that there are a number of very close friends that we have who we would not be in touch with anymore if it wasn't for Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We would have lost touch with them 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So I do think that maybe there is a way of inviting connection with people who you love using modern technology without it actually becoming an obsession or a comparison or all the bad things that people kind of label social media as. And I don't know if there is a way of really deepening those connections across technology, though, unless it's phone calls, unless it's, you know, sitting and making the time to have those phone calls with people, checking in, asking them important questions, letting them know that you think about them.
Mm.
Even just a text message to say that you're thinking about them is enough sometimes. I mean, one of my best mates, I see her probably every 2 or 3 years, and we don't even talk that often, but like on birthdays, I'll send her a video message just wishing her a happy birthday. And utilizing the technology that we have can be helpful, but it's definitely a challenge.
It's a tool. Definitely doesn't replace it, does it? So one of my good mates is from England and lives in Australia, and he is a prolific letter writer. Like, he still writes to people back in England notes, like letters and like postcards. Like, he just is really, really good at that.
Yeah.
And
he values it.
Values it. And it's so, it just means a lot. And it's so obvious. Like, yeah, a handwritten letter is wonderful. But it really, like, have you, try and do it. Like, it is amazing. And when you receive one, it's so nice to receive that.
I think that that's a really lovely suggestion, and I am going to write some letters.
Okay.
Mm. Didn't say when, so if my family's listening and they haven't received a letter yet.
Don't expect one. Don't,
yeah, exactly. Well, I will send one.
On the tour.
That's right.
It's probably going to be a
letter. Maybe a postcard. Yeah. No, but I just think that that's a gorgeous thing, and because tied up in that is not only the words. You could write the same words in an email, but there is time and presence given to writing a letter that I don't think is reflected in an email.
Mm.
Even if the same thought goes into it, people don't keep emails. I mean, maybe they do, but they don't print them out and keep them tied up in a beautiful little packet with, you know, a little ribbon. People don't do that to emails.
Mm.
They do that to letters.
Mm.
So I think that's a really lovely, slow, intentional, thoughtful way of keeping in touch with people.
Yeah. One other thing that I want to mention before we wrap this up is affection. Mm. Like, showing affection to, you obviously do it to your immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
I still hug and kiss both our children every day.
Yes.
So
please don't stop.
And I don't ever want to stop. But broader than that,
yeah.
So other extended family members, because I have a member of my broader family, male, who just hugs everyone.
Yeah. He's super affectionate.
Super affectionate. And I love it.
Mm.
And he brought that to the family, and it was quite, there was a lot of family members taken aback by getting some of
the
hugged.
The older gents.
Yeah, the older silverbacks.
Yeah.
They were, yeah, just taken aback a little bit about it. But now it's just more accepted.
Well, everyone hugs.
Everyone just has a hug. And it just breaks down barriers straight away.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
It puts everyone on a even keel, and it's so nice to just show a bit of affection and just tell people how much you love them and,
exactly,
and value them and respect them. Like, the first thing you do is that.
Yeah.
And if you do that and there's a difficult family member, you will notice a huge difference to just the tone of the whole environment and scene that you're in.
Yeah. And I also think just to people who you do love, and there's no question of it, but you may not say it, say it. You know, I remember saying it to your dad a couple of years ago, and it was just so beautiful. And I felt like there was a really, it was a special moment. And I think about it a lot. And he says it back to me now, you know, and I think that that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And just telling people what they mean to you is important because I don't know how many more times humans have to hear the stories from people on their deathbed who have said, I wish I had have told people I love them more.
Mm.
So do it.
Yeah.
Don't wait until you're that person telling someone else. Just do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell people how you feel.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when our son got to a certain age, there are a few older male relatives who stopped hugging him. And they started shaking his hand.
Yeah.
And I remember it hurt him.
Really?
It hurt. Yeah. It hurt our son because he's a really affectionate kid. And he was only sort of 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh no, time's come. Like, time's come to shake hands. And I had a quiet word to these relatives who were like, that the reason they stopped is they thought that they should stop. They thought they didn't want to. They didn't want to not hug him.
Wow.
But they thought that they needed to stop because he was getting to a certain age. I'm like, nope.
No.
It's okay to hug. Doesn't matter how old you are. You could be 180.
Yeah.
Hugs are still on the cards.
I am getting emotional thinking about it the day that I stopped kissing my son.
Mm.
Like, I don't want that to happen.
Then it doesn't have to be a day. There's certain like European cultures who greet, like men greet each other with a kiss on the lips or a kiss on the cheeks.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Grown men and their fathers.
Mm.
And I think that's wonderful.
Mm.
And why can't it be part of our family fabric? You know, there was a story, I don't know the background of it. I only remember reading about the outrage, but Tom Brady, you know, the footballer, there was a photo of him kissing his 10-year-old son on the lips and people were outraged by it. I'm like, really? This is what we're upset about?
I know.
You know, a father loving his son.
What a joke.
And I don't know, I agree. I get really emotional thinking about those walls coming down. I remember I used to dread the moment that our daughter stopped holding my hand and she still does it. Mm. And I look around and I get so much joy when I see like a grown mum and her grown daughter holding hands.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
You know, I just think that affection is powerful.
Yeah.
So take the time to tell people who you love that you love them. All differences aside, how powerful to have that unconditional love and put it out into the world.
So I think that's the action for this week.
Tell someone you love them.
Mm. Yeah.
Like every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really
and
do.
See what difference that makes to just being that spending that time with them.
Mm.
And I bet your bottom dollar you'll have some pretty amazing conversations.
Mm. I'd love to hear about it. Hey, Ben, I love you.
I love you too.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.